What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
Minnesotans in unison enjoy all this great state has to offer during the summer. From Niagara Cave to the Lake of the Woods, it's great we can experience a state so rich in landmarks, landscapes, art, and adventure. With so many adventure options, we were thinking, why are so many Minnesotans limiting their options for insurance for home and autos? Today, 80% of Minnesotans have their insurance with one agent who has only one company. That means no options. At the Canopy Group, we offer you more than 16 companies for your home and auto insurance and 40 professionals to do business with. So as your needs change, we have options that continue to provide you with the best coverage for the best price. You wouldn't want to fish in only one of Minnesota's 10,000 lakes, and we don't want you to be stuck with only one insurance company. Visit thecanopygroup.com or call 800-967-3389. Get many insurance options today.
Always fun, crazy.
It's painful, but it's wonderful.
What is the name?
It's Royce Unchained.
All right, Patrick Royce, what's on your mind this Monday?
I was surprised that you were surprised to discover yesterday that Herbie Cardiel told you what time the plane was arriving every time that he signed off because Kathy was listening, and this was to tell Kathy when to pick him up at the airport.
I had no idea. I remember him always saying...
And it was like he was calculating it, too, because the traveling secretary would tell him when the plane was going to leave. And then he'd have flight time. He'd have to do the math on the flight time. And then he had to add like 10 minutes. But it was to tell his wife, Kathy, what time the plane was arriving.
When you tweeted that, I remember that very vividly, him saying, you know, the Twins will be getting back to the Twin Cities about 5:05.
Yes, right.
Yeah. I never knew that was why.
It was,
I just sort of accepted
Kathy
it.
Kathy was listening to the game, and she had him tell her. Because otherwise, you know, no cell phones.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would have had to get to a payphone or some damn thing or have some kind of a phone call. So this was the way of communication. But
oh my God,
your surprise at this got me thinking about what this organization was like in 1974. Now this is year 14 of my first spring training, so I can only imagine how small and cozy everything was before, you know, like in the 60s when they first came here. But in 74, it was, I put my arms out like this. It was like this. There was like 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had their wives. And the wives, most of them had come to spring training for no reason. Just, and the wives would be there, and they'd all be down at the pool, and you knew who all the wives were.
Right.
And the wives would be down there telling, you know, telling tales about everything. That if you wanted inside information on the organization, go down and eavesdrop at the pool, and Kathy knew all. Kathy would have been the greatest blogger in the history.
Really?
In the history of the Twins, had she. She knew all. She sat down near the wives. She didn't sit with the wives, but she sat.
I remember at the Metrodome where
she sat near the wives.
Yeah, I remember that.
And overheard conversation. If you wanted to know who was having marital problems, you could go to, you know, you did want to know, but if you did, you could have gone to Kathy.
Oh, wow.
But I was thinking about spring training in 74.
Mm-hmm.
The Twins would have 20 people there from Minnesota. This was still before flying was deregulated. It was too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they'd have the fan in the stands group from CCO, where the average age was older than me now, right? Yes. And that was about 40. Hey, we had a pretty good crowd. And they would tell you, like, people, Jimmy Robertson, he was down there, Billy. And they would tell you, yeah, the fans in the stands are coming Friday. Like, I was going to be excited about this, this or something. But as far as the fans who came from Minnesota, there was they knew who they all were. You know, like Collie Anderson was a famous Twins fan. Collie was an old guy from St. Paul, I believe, maybe Minneapolis, but he was at every game in the room down there. What was the Minnesota room? What they call the room?
At the Met?
Met downstairs. There was the Twins room down there, but the room that the public
I don't
could
remember,
get
but
into. Yeah, there was a room, and Collie was in there at the bar every time. But, you know, you'd be walking around, and Jimmy'd say, Collie's coming to town. Collie will be here Friday, you know. And then Collie was 2 weeks. Collie and his wife would be there for 2 weeks. They'd know where they got. And you'd see somebody at the ballpark, and you'd say, hey, Jimmy, who's that? And they'd say, they're from, they're a couple from Swanville. They drive down here all the time. They've been coming. Bill and Judy from Swanville, they'd come down here. They stop on the way with visit friends in Indianapolis. They know who where they stopped, who the hell. They knew everything about these people because there were so few of them.
Right.
Nobody ever came to spring training. The concept of spring training trips, nobody had that. Because nobody could have, you know, flying was probably $350 then, which is $1,200 today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So nobody ever flew down. And then when you got there, you know, yeah. A lot of them stayed at the Twins Hotel, which originally was the Kaler when I was there. But before that, it was a court of – and then they stayed later. They moved to a bigger place out – more out in the country, the Court of Flags. And it was bigger and not as intimate. But the Kaler, you know, the bar was down there, and everybody – that's where everybody congregated at the bar. And, you know, it was – you know, the – not only did the team officials stay there,
right?
The players would scatter around. Most of them would rent something, but the fans they'd get them rooms when the fans showed up at the hotel. For the most part, if they wanted to, a lot of them would find a cheaper place to play, or they'd stay, or they'd have friends who they'd made that they would stay with at their house. But it was unbelievable. I was thinking, the whole mass of humanity surrounding the Twins then, counting the wives, was like 80 people, you know. And now you have hundreds.
Well, look at the marketing departments now.
Yeah, but I don't know anybody.
Yeah,
I don't know any. I don't know any of the analysts or anybody like that.
And they don't want you to. By the
then, I knew who the hell. Back then, I knew who the fans were and what the wives' name were, and all the wives. We knew all the wives, and the wives were. They'd be down at the pool, and you know, some of the wives were like 60 years old, but they would be sitting around talking about this gentle lunch they were going to have because they were watching their weight and, you know, everything. And then they'd go out and had 12 drinks and a steak some damn place at night. But they were all – lunch was always going to be
a little dainty.
I overheard this a few times because back then we occasionally – we wouldn't go to all the road games. There was three of us, me from St. Paul and then a guy from the Star and a guy from the Tribune. And – you know, if they were going to Fort Myers or something, it was like this ungodly 4-hour trip. One of us would go and call the other guys with quotes, you know, and then they'd do the same for you if you didn't want to make the road to Dunedin, which is to get to Dunedin back then took days because of the traffic. You've been up at Dunedin.
Back then, I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah, there was nothing back then. It was gravel roads. But the Griffiths loved Orlando. Because the family went back to the 30. The 31 or 2 was their first year in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And Calvin told me about, you know, before the war and through the war and maybe into the 50s, you'd go a mile out of town and you'd be on gravel roads and sand roads. And some of the roads in the back were sand. And you'd run into another car coming at you and one of you had to pull off to the side.
Oh my God!
To let the other one through, and there was a because it was sand, you had to always have a shovel in the back because you might have to shovel yourself out if you were the one who decided to move over. It was like you know you're running into somebody on these roads, and this was. It was Southern redneck as it gets before Disney showed up still. Mm-hmm. Disney was just arriving at the same time I did. I think they were 72 or 3 or something was right. Their first year. But they were stuck out there in the country. There was no the golf courses. The golf developments were just starting to be built because it's kind of tied in with Disney. But it's I was thinking about it today. What a world it was, you know.
Well, the spring training ballparks were nothing.
Oh no!
You know,
God,
now you got boardwalks and all this.
Digger Field was just you should. Oh, it's a sad thing that you were never there. It was.
Oh, I was there.
Oh, were you there?
Yeah, the old man took me in '80, I believe it was.
It was unbelievable. What do you think? Maybe
there would have been no boardwalk
there. Maybe was 6 rows of what they would have considered box seats. Maybe 5. And then about another 8 rows of the grandstand.
Towards the press box.
The grandstand. Tinker could have passed for a town team baseball park.
Yes.
In Minnesota.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the bleachers there was. And then they built these ratty old bleachers that went down the left field line, but they never needed them. There was, you know, some games there were 200 people, you know. But the clubhouse, Judd, was. If we put these two rooms together and it doubled it, that would be the clubhouse for everyone invited to the major league camp. For the major league camp. And they had, as you saw, they had Tinker Field to work out, and then they had that half field next door where they could hit ground balls. But batting practice in the 70s took hours. You know, the spring training before they started playing games.
Right.
It took hours because you had one cage. You could only hit one place. And it was, you know, now they can get through batting practice in 45 minutes if they want to because they got them hitting at 3 different fields.
And those fields had to be absolutely sunbaked because there's that George Toma was going picking up rocks in
the field
70s.
Next door was nicknamed Iwo Jima. They always said, have you seen Kelly today? Yeah, he's over at Eel hitting grounders. And they did grounders, and these guys would be going, You know, you couldn't get your face in front of a ball there at Eel. Yeah, and they were the other one was baked out, too, but they put water on that one. But Eel was just unbelievable. And Melbourne, which they had their minor league team, was unbelievable. It was an old airport. Area. It was out by the old airport. That's where they stayed in these old barracks that used to, because they in World War II, the people flew in and out of there, and these had these barracks, and that basically where the minor leaguers stayed. But the fields were rocks, absolutely rocks. And they'd be out there and I went over there to see Puck. I remember the first time, and when he was, they were talking about this kid, and he would have hit 900 playing in Melbourne because he could drive the ball into the.
It was like AstroTurf.
It was 3 times harder than the Metrodome.
So where was that in relation to Orlando?
It was away. It was over about 2 hours, damn near, because the road stunk. But it was right over by Coco. You know, Coco,
which is where the Astros
played, okay. And that Coco Beach was where I Dream of Jeannie, and that's where Melbourne, and that was the Space Center over there. They were just building the Space Center there. And, I went over there, and we used to play. Nobody wanted, the Astros finally moved to Kissimmee, and everybody was happy, but the Twins used to play them 8 times a spring because nobody wanted to go over there. And Calvin would go anywhere if they gave him an extra $50. And, God, I'd drive you nuts. driving over there. I told you that Mock and I think Bill Verdon was the man. I can't remember who their manager was. It was Bill Verdon. It was.
Yeah, probably.
You'd get over there. And then Mock and him would play like three extra innings because they wanted some pitchers. They were looking for more innings.
Oh, that's
for
not what we do
pitchers.
Now.
They were looking for more innings for the pitchers. And, you know, I've told you about the Coco ballpark. It was in the middle of the jungle.
Yep.
And they used to get kids from the area to go out there early in the morning in the dew and chase the snakes back into the lounging in the outfield, chase them back into the jungle.
Oh, God.
So those kids, Florida-raised country kids, little different attitude
towards
snakes.
That's how you become Florida man.
Yeah, right. Little different attitude towards snakes than we had in Minnesota. Ah! There's a garter snake.
Are you kidding? I see a snake. I'm going the other way immediately.
Me too. They don't, you know, they just, you know.
I don't care if they can bite you or not. I'm scared of them.
No. Me neither. Slimy. I have no interest. Nothing to do with it. But, yeah, it got me thinking about how great it was back. And the lunchroom, the cafeteria, was as big as this studio.
I'm surprised it was that big.
And the players ate in there.
Oh, okay.
And they had a crotchety Russ. What was Russ's last name? Russ was the chief, and Russ would have a couple of toddies. And Russ was mean. Was meaner than a snake. And they loved to play pranks on him. Blylevin and those guys. Blylevin was a kid. They loved to play. But I remember one day, if you asked Russ for anything that wasn't just sitting out in front of you, Russ would, you know, tell you to go bleep yourself. Even if you were Calvin, he didn't care if you were a player, the star player, or the owner or anything. It was bleep you, Russ. And remember once, Blylevin put a sign up outside right where you walked in, says, "Ask Russ for a piece of his famous banana cream pie. And they all came in and everybody like, "Hey, Russ, I want a piece of that banana cream pie." And he said, "There's none. What are you talking about?"
Oh, God.
It was great. It was so quaint. And then, of course, the equipment guys who were helping, you know, for the first couple of weeks before the minor leaguers got right there, went to Melbourne, was Hathaway and those guys. Hathaway and what was the other guy? Buck Chamberlain. They were equipment managers, trainers.
Yeah.
They were one person operation.
Slap some gauze on that.
So you would send your, you know, you were second year player of a number one draft choice would be in Double A Orlando in the Southern League. And Hathaway would be his trainer. You know, if there was anything seriously wrong, they'd call a doctor. But beyond that, as far as getting you ready for that day's game, you were on your own.
Concussion protocol did not exist.
No.
You didn't go to the quiet room.
Yeah, you get your bell ring back then. It was still, that was the early in the, he got his bell ring.
Yep.
That's okay, you know. I think they might add smelling salts by 74 if the catcher got keeled over.
Now, is that the coaching staff that you talk about that had like two guys or three guys?
Well, here in Quillacy's, I took over the beat 74 and Quillacy was, it had to be 75. So Quillacy's last season. The pitching coach, Lee Stang, who was a loyal Twins employee though, but Boston offered him money, actual money, you know, like a $8,000 raise or something to become their pitching coach. I believe it was Boston. So instead of replacing him, they made Buck Rogers, who was the bullpen coach, pitching coach / bullpen coach. He became the pitching coach. And then they had Ralph Rowe was the hitting coach and the first base coach, and Ralph was in his 60s. And Vern Morgan was the third base coach. And infield coach, but Vern had some blood disease, so he couldn't do anything. So, yeah, the only two guys that threw then nobody went on the road to throw. You know, they didn't have any.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know. At home, they would get some kids, a couple of kids to throw BP.
Yep.
But on the road, it was Frankie, Rogers. And they'd get Jerry Terrell to throw some, too, because he was a utility infielder. The estimated number of pitches thrown by Quillacy and Buck Rogers that year was 100,000.
Rocco would not have approved of this plan at all.
No, he would not have. Rocco would. Rocco has, would have. What I love is Rocco now is complaining because he might have to go to 13 pitchers.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yeah, we talked about it.
I'm praying that they make him go to 13 pitches. But Calvin in 65, I guess, maybe six. No, seven. When Tovar was a rookie, so it had to be 65 because he just was there in April and then September. But they back then, you could keep 28 players until May 1st. The reason being you could keep extra pitchers to get them ready to pitch the season. That year, Calvin started with 9 pitchers and 19 position players. Who needed more than 9 pitchers, for God's sakes?
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, because they didn't take them out.
No, they didn't take them out. Well, I showed this the other day to Steve Stone when he was in the press box because he was talking about the way they use pitchers. The 67 Twins, who had 8 guys pitch all but 73 innings. They had 2 lefties, Jim Ollam and Roland, who were up kind of alternately during the year that pitched 35 innings apiece. Then they had Dwight Siebler pitch like a third of an inning, and Mel Nelson pitched like two and a third innings.
Yep.
And everybody else was 8 guys. 8 guys pitched the rest of the innings. And they played 2 extra games that year. They had 2 ties, 67. So they played 164 games. And 8 pitchers basically had all but 73 innings.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now going to have a heart attack if we have to only have 13 pitchers.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I'm not saying it was a better way.
No.
But it was more fun because you could find out, Kathy, what's going on? She'd tell you. He said hello to Kathy.
I love the fact, though, that Herbie would announce the arrival time for his own so he could be picked up properly at the airport.
Yes, he got. So all the time, I think Herbie outlived Kathy and was still on the air. But
yeah, he did.
But until then, if you go back, and you know what? I did not know that until Tom Mee told me. I said, for some reason, I said, why does Herbie always tell us what time the plane's coming home? And he says, man, so Kathy can pick him up at the airport.
So he'll be getting back around 6:15 this evening.
Well, that's like Tommy telling me, that Tommy was the greatest because he knew all the secrets,
Oh, of course.
And and we would all, I was on the beat. We'd spend all spring. The whole spring was who's going to make the club,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And I've told you this story. And then Sid would breeze in the last week. And 2 days later, he would announce what the opening day roster was. And it'd piss us all off. Even Calvin wouldn't tell you, And Calvin was an open book. He'd give you hints and you'd have. And I'd say, it used to drive me. This was 20 years ago, probably. And he says, you guys never figured that out, huh? He got it from Crump, Ray Crump's wife. Sewed the uniforms. She sewed the names on the uniforms. So he had to know a week ahead of time who to have his wife sew the names on the uniforms. So that's how he got it from Ray Crump. And then he'd give Crump plugs on the radio.
Right. So he would just get the list from Crump who was the equipment guy.
Yeah.
Crump would. God.
He was smart in his own crafty, in his own crotchety, crazy way.
Sid was
smarter than hell.
Absolutely.
Sid was probably...
So Calvin didn't know how Sid got this idea.
I don't think so either. No, they just...
Because Calvin and Sid weren't really pals, were they?
No, Calvin wasn't a big fan of Sid's.
Okay.
Because
when I transcribed for the book, the twin stuff was not nearly as glowing as some of the other stuff.
No, his relationship with the twins is never, even with the CCO thing and doing the pre-games and stuff, it never hurt his feelings as much when they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. The Vikings losing, Gopher football losing, that destroyed him. He was much more neutral about the Twins. And hockey was, he liked the North Stars, but it was hockey.
Right,
so,
he didn't care.
Yeah, so he didn't. I mean, it was nice if they had a run and he was buddies with, Walter Bush and those guys. But it wasn't like in his soul like football was. And, you know, we didn't get them. You know, the NBA was, when I got into the business, the NBA was gone for damn near 30 years.
Right.
So.
And Sid had technically not been able to write about the Lakers because
he didn't write about the Lakers because he.
Write Lakers?
Because he was making trades. He insisted running the team, although telling Sid's version is that he made all decisions. And, you know, at the end, Johnny Kundla decided not to refute him. Kundla and Mickelson had both shake their heads.
Yeah.
But, the Twins were always like, he was always skeptical of them because, well, another thing is Allison couldn't stand him, so Allison treated him badly, and he didn't like that. And Harmon was polite to everybody,
but right.
Harmon wasn't giving him any hot interviews or information or anything, so.
Right.
And so it was not, he didn't have that close relationship with the Twins that he, you know, where the Vikings were like, well, Max wasn't involved either. Mm-hmm. You know, if Max was involved, then it was very important to Sid because they went back 100 years. So anyhow, that got me thinking when you,
the old sports days.
Oh God. Yeah.
Like Al, you talked to Al last
year. Yeah.
Shaver. I mean, that stuff is so fun.
Yeah. Well, Albie was, you know, sitting there and, I love them. I told you this, I guess, that I'm kicking myself for never getting in the car with Sonmore and Shaver and riding to Houghton or someplace with them.
Oh, God.
How great would have that been? You could have written two chapters of a book just going up there.
Those broadcasts, and, Pat. Oh.
Yeah, with Al kind of being objective and Glenn cheering mightily
and ripping the officials at every
and
turn.
Al really never had to work with a second guy. I mean, Cannon would show up, right?
Yeah.
On home games.
Well, he worked with Ted Robinson for a couple of years
home games,
worked alone.
Yeah, on the road, yeah. He worked
I don't think he ever had a partner on radio road games.
And then at the end, Norm gave him Ralph, right? He gave him Ralph.
He gave him Ralphie. And then at the very end, the last year or two, he gave him some TV games because he was so identified with the team.
Oh, really? Did he do some TV? I can't remember.
Yeah, in fact, the last game the North Stars played in Detroit was Al and Wally. They paired him up on TV.
If you look at his bio, it says he did Wild Games the first year, which is not true.
What?
He might have appeared.
On Al's bio?
Yeah, it says
no. He never.
No, it didn't. I said, Al, you didn't do, and he said, no, I never did any of their games. They might have.
He came into town for the first
stopped
one.
It, well, they for the named, press box. Named the press box yeah. after him, and he might have hung around. And
Bob Critch told me that at one point in time, Al was joining him on like part of the broadcast for the Wild in the first year, and Kurtzy told him if you'd like to do, you know, if you want to jump in and do play by play, he said, I'm done.
Oh, he'd get him between periods or something.
But
like
Al
that.
Said, I'm not doing play by play anymore.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, I had him on a speakerphone, and he heard me clearly, and his mind was sharp. So, but I was surprised he's 96. I thought he was maybe 91 or 2.
Yep.
So.
And he actually got out.
He was a veteran announcer when he got hired here. Mm-hmm. One story he told me, which I didn't get in because of space reasons, mm-hmm. his dad said to him when he took the Minnesota job, his dad said, couldn't get a job in Canada? You couldn't get a job with an NHL team in Canada? And he said, Dad, there's two teams in Canada, Toronto and Montreal, and they've had the same announcer, and they aren't moving aside.
Foster Hewitt and Quentin in 1967.
They aren't moving aside legendary announcements to make room for me. So, no, if I want to do the NHL, I got to go somewhere, and Minnesota's as close to Canada as I can get. But it was his dad, as a true blue Canadian, was
funny.
Very upset. Why don't you do one of the Canadian teams? And he said, you know, we forget that. There were two.
Oh, God, yeah.
There were two.
Yeah, six
and in
teams.
In fact,
before that,
Vancouver was the only team the NHL added, right? The others came out of the
Winnipeg, Quebec.
And Winnipeg, Quebec, Calgary,
yeah, at
and
the
Edmonton.
Time,
Calgary
and
Edmonton.
Vancouver wasn't, I don't think, joined the league until 1970. Because Al came here in 67 when they expanded by six teams.
So Calgary
was
lost their team and then got Atlanta back?
No.
You know, they, when they
Calgary
when they
didn't have a team.
Weren't they in the WCA?
WHA, I don't think they were.
Really?
Oh, Atlanta. Okay. Atlanta then had a short run there.
Yeah,
didn't work.
Flames.
And like 6 years in or something, moved to Calgary.
And then they tried them again.
Yeah.
Then,
Quebec was absorbed, and so were the old Winnipeg Jets.
And our second Flames, where did they go? Second Atlanta, where did they go? I can't remember.
They're the Jets now.
They're the
so
Jets.
The Thrashers are the new Jets. The old Jets are the Phoenix or Arizona
Coyotes.
It is
amazing that as well as hockey's done in the South, that they went 0-2 in Atlanta, right?
Yep.
Especially the second
time. Well, and the Coyotes are about to play in the Arizona State Building next season, which is going to seat like 6,000.
Because their feud with Glendale.
Yeah, I think they were booted from Glendale.
Well, Glendale's mad at them because they weren't paying their rent, right?
Supposedly that was up for debate, but so they got booted from there. They're going to play in the small building, and they're trying to get land now to build a bigger building, but I don't know what's going to happen.
No, they should.
There's something weird there. I don't know why they didn't move about 5 years ago.
Yeah. Kansas City or someplace, you know.
Quebec before the
Phoenix is a better market, but
It hasn't worked.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if they ever got as good as Florida. By the way, Florida will probably be back to 6,000 next year if they get swept by these guys with this club. This is very remindful of that great Tampa team that got swept in the first round, right? Except they're getting swept by a better team in the second round, Tampa.
I don't know that our old friend Bruno is going to survive this thing.
No, they'll blame him probably.
Because he said, he came out and said on Sunday, basically, they want it more, which is a big problem in hockey.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting the pucks, they're doing this, they're doing that, and we're just not.
I wouldn't agree with that. I would think that it's just that team is now crusty.
Yep.
Tampa Bay is now crusty. Yes.
You know, they lost to Columbus.
They got Corey Perry, do they?
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. When did they get him?
He bounced
halfway through the year?
No. He signed, I believe he was a free agent after last year. So he's been to the Stanley Cup final now. Dallas, they lost. Montreal, they lost. Mm-hmm. And if Tampa goes back, third consecutive year.
Yeah. Well, they changed their whole approach from being this high, one of the most high-powered NHL teams in history to they're now mean.
Mm-hmm. So, but mean is what you need in the playoffs.
And but the coach, is the coach of that great team, offensive team, still their coach?
John Cooper?
He's still there, right?
Still there.
He's had a pretty good run. He's been
a really good run.
They never fired him when they were...
One-time coach of the Green Bay Gamblers of the USHL.
Right? All right. Well, anyhow... So, that's our thing. As far as the Twinks on the field, that was a nice win yesterday.
That was a nice comeback, yeah.
And this was one of the days where I'm not upset about Buxton and Correa and those guys not playing because Sunday, it's the week TK and then Gardy taught us. The Sunday lineup.
Well, Craig did pinch hit. So they got him off.
Yeah,
they put him on his feet.
They put him on his feet to pinch hit, which was amazing.
Straightened him up and put him on his feet.
Apparently he doesn't need the warm-up that Buck needs like 8-9 hours to get ready to play. But as I said on Twitter, the only guy missing is Jeff Rebelet. Where's Reb, man?
Yeah.
Where's Reb?
Yep.
Reb.
Mike Redmond catching.
Yes, Mike Redmond. Reb would play.
Shorter second.
Reb would play 35 games a year and 26 of them were on Sundays, right? Mm-hmm. He was a Sunday shortstop or someplace in the infield. Great guy, by the way. But yeah, it's we are used to around here the idea of Sunday lineup. So, but that Sunday lineup looked pretty pathetic for seven innings, and that
Singer was real good.
He just rolled through them.
Their bullpen.
I wasn't watching all of it because I was watching a lot of golf. I didn't see the rally because I gave up on him and was watching golf. So and then I looked at my phone.
It was a boom, boom, boom.
What happened?
And Dick got excited, and I thought, Dick, calm down. You're getting too excited. And then sure enough, they just kept getting the bullpen blew up. The Royals bullpen absolutely
and they
blew
got,
up. They brought in different guys.
They got some 98 mile an hour guys.
You know what, though?
Too.
You know where you're right going back now 2 years, 3 years? Arise at first base and just playing, okay?
Yeah.
But when you said when they were swept by the Astros, your point was they are not athletic at all. Like, yes, they just come to dead halts. You know, Sano ends things.
Yes.
They now have the ability with what they're doing to continue to move the lineup.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not saying they're great but athletically, but it's better than that
they
was.
They don't run into the automatic strikeout.
Yep. Yeah. Which I think just ends things.
And all right, it's first base. I don't care. You know, I read, Suen's column about how Morneau can tell you what you got to be an athlete to play first base. Yes, you do. I mean, it's nice to have a great first baseman, right?
Yes.
A really good.
Yes.
But you don't need one. You know, it's the fat guy's position.
Yep.
And when Miguel Cabrera, when he couldn't play third, they moved him. I mean, that's where you put guys who can't move, right?
And Arise is fine there.
And Arise is fine.
He's fine.
And you look at him and you get this idea he's short, but he's about 6 foot, almost 6 foot. He's taller than you think.
I think it's because he's stocky.
Yeah, he is.
He's
stocky,
a stocky guy.
And the way he hits.
But he's bad at third base. I would far prefer him at first base.
Yeah, well especially with the other guy playing third, Urshel is. Yeah, he's fine.
But I like the fact that they now have some guys that can actually play the game and don't just stand there.
Yeah, well, the infield is. Yeah, I mean, Urshel is not a speed demon or anything, and neither is Arise, but they're athletic,
yeah, they
and and the outfield when either Buxton or Celestino is in center field is fine, and Kepler's good in right field, mm-hmm. where he belongs.
Mm-hmm.
And left field is Larnick's okay, and whoever else is playing there is okay. But
agreed.
There's this thought that if they end up adding Kirilloff, that Celestino's got to be in your club, even if he's not a hit or not, because you need him to play center field 3 days a week. The tradition used to be center field, shortstop, second base, catcher were your defensive positions, right? Well, short with the shifts and stuff, center field is way more important than shortstop is now and mm-hmm. second base. But next year, if they get rid of the shifts, then you're going to have an athlete at shortstop again who can make the play in the hole. And you don't see the play in the hole anymore because the guy's standing in the hole, right?
Right.
You know, how many backhand throw to first do you see? Not very many. But you're going to have to see him next year because you're only going to have two guys over there. So,
yeah.
And if it's a right-handed hitter, they'll shift them to some degree, but you can't give up the middle of the field.
So do we think the rule is going to be that you have to be on the right side of the correct side of your base and you can't be on the grass? Is that where we're going?
We don't know. The grass thing is going to be
interesting. I don't care about that.
No. I care more about being
on the correct side of the
base. The second basemen were playing 30 feet out on the grass when Ted Williams was playing.
Absolutely.
They just didn't leave shortstop open.
Yep.
You know. So, and they had shifts. I don't mind that, but if you get to see shortstop make plays again, that'd be good. So,
yep.
And by the way, prima facie evidence that Royce Lewis shouldn't be moving around, right?
I saw your tweets.
And yesterday.
He's got six hits.
Yesterday, shortstop, he was 3-for-5.
Yep.
3-for-3 the first game. He's 6-for-8 playing shortstop. He's 0-for-8 playing the other places.
Mm-hmm.
So he can hit when he plays other places. He's got to be at shortstop, else he can't hit. It's the evidence.
So that's it.
The evidence.
Well, then put him back at shortstop.
The evidence is right there.
But what they're doing still now makes no sense.
What, moving him around. Yeah.
The only thing that I would go along with is what you said, which is if he's going down to play short because you're convinced he needs to play short.
We want him to get
but
better.
But this whole thing of shifting him around, oh, man, he's going to learn how to play left field.
Jim wrote today that he played spectacular shortstop. He played okay shortstop, and he managed to make most of the plays, even though some of them look like very shaky. He's not a smooth shortstop yet. He's a great athlete, but he's not a smooth shortstop. He needs all the work at shortstop he can get, because he's going to be your shortstop next year.
Sure.
So. Anyway.
But you know what?
But, I'd just as soon have Urshel playing third as him. I'm not dead set on him.
Here's my question to you. Why is Jose Miranda still here?
Don't know.
I don't know. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, I do. He got a hit the other day. Yeah.
He's, I think, 7 for 60 with 13 strikeouts.
Well, he won't swing.
No, I know.
He won't swing the bat.
But why is he here?
He thinks he's Joe Mauer.
I keep hearing,
one,
who else is going to play first base if Arise? Anybody.
Louis Arise. Ursula. Yeah, anybody.
Miranda's no good at first.
No.
He's a third baseman.
No. That's the best plan I've heard. They should have Lewis play first base. Okay. Yeah. Let's take one of our two best athletes and put him at the position where it doesn't make any difference if you're an athlete or not.
And you know what?
Louis Arise is fine.
That's what I was going to say. And here's the thing.
Every day. And if you're going to catch Jeffers, instead of wasting the DH on Sanchez, let Sanchez play first base. They're going to get caught, by the way, not having another catcher.
Yeah.
They're going to be.
Oh, Gardy's going to be at home ripping his hair off.
Yeah, all right.
Gardy's
done. How could they do that? I can't play Joe Mauer today because Mike Redmond's playing and he's my only other catcher. What do you think?
That was one of the most fun paranoid things ever.
Oh, yeah. And then it's the third catcher when he had to have the third catcher, you know.
And it would be some guy that couldn't do anything right.
Yeah. Well, the tradition of Tom Kelly was you had to make sure your backup catcher couldn't hit. You know, Tom Nieto or something.
Yep.
It had to be somebody who couldn't hit.
Yep.
And it took him a long time to get on the Harper bandwagon.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because he was too good a hitter.
Yep.
He can't be a catcher. He's too good a hitter, damn it.
And they had all those veterans. Prince came through here.
Yeah,
Nieto, Blanco.
Yeah.
They picked up every guy that came on the waiver wire.
They picked up Henry Blanco, and then Mauer got hurt opening night and played 35 games that year. Blanco played the rest of them, basically.
And we never worried about getting him off his feet.
Oh, is that when Sal Butera came back? When Joe got hurt and then Blanco?
Sal Butera?
Yeah, Sal.
No. Sal came back in 87.
Oh, that's right. What am I thinking of? Jeez.
Sal was here
at
Met Stadium.
Who came to back up Henry in 03, Joe's first year? I wonder
I can't remember
who their other catcher was that year because Henry was here to catch.
That period's all kind of a blur to me.
Henry was here to catch 25 games and then. And then you got Joe.
2003, right?
Yeah, 2003.
I was just going to say
Joe got hurt opening day. Played 35 games.
Yeah, he tore the meniscus?
Yeah, first day. It was slipped on the wonderful Metrodome turf there.
Oh, yeah, the warning track.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm looking at 2003 stats. Catchers, Tom Prince, 38
games. Okay, that's when they brought Prince in.
Rob Bowen.
Yeah.
Perzinski. Wait, no. This had to be 04 that Joe came up, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. What am I thinking of?
Perzinski still
Joe was 04. Yeah, Perzinski was traded after 03.
Because that was the famous.
I'm off by a year.
All right. Blanco, 114 games. Not concerned about him being on his feet.
And who?
Mauer ended up in 35 games before he missed out. Pat Borders.
Oh,
it was Pat
briefly.
Borders who played for Toronto.
We thought he could get some hits, but he was Pat Borders as a catcher was a pretty good hitter.
Yep,
but he was another guy who changed positions, and they made him a catcher. He was a World Series winner, though. Right?
He was, yeah.
Wasn't he? Way back
he was pretty good on those teams.
So he had to be
286 up here.
He had to be a crusty old veteran by then, right?
41.
41?
41 years
wow.
old. God, did they have some teams.
I would have never guessed that he was on that team. Never guessed on that team. So we probably didn't get much golf out of you yesterday.
I watched the end, and the meltdown was incredible. Declan was glued to it.
Declan?
Yes, sir.
What a collection of mutts.
Yeah.
God, they played
off. That's a great way to look at it.
Zalatoris wanted to shoot 78 yesterday where he hit the ball, but he got a few breaks.
Yep.
I mean, when you hit it under the bush where there are animals.
Yep.
You shouldn't end up making bogey. They should by automatically, you know, you should be able to go drop it someplace 50 yards from where you went in the first place. God, they played terrible.
Yeah.
All of them. And then as bad swings in major golf go, the one the leader hit on 18 was unbelievable.
Oh, it was terrible.
He stumbled. Why was he trying to hit it 350? Why
no
didn't
idea.
He hit it 270 down the middle?
His heart was pounding out of his shirt.
Yeah, well, he was completely psycho. He was just taking, And he ran up there. When he got to the tee box, he ran up there and put it in play before he, you know, vacated his bowels or some damn thing. He was so terrified. God, it was unbelievable.
Well, even the chip to get on the green
was terrible.
Was horrible.
Yeah.
I have flushed better ones than that,
yeah,
for God's sake.
You gotta make this one. Oh, he was completely gone. Now the play before, he damn near made that, the hole before, he almost made that putt. That was the only good shot he hit in about the last three, four round holes, but God, what a collection. And then JT wanted to kill himself.
Yep.
After missing the putt on 18, he looked like his whole family had died. And then he ends up in the playoff. He said, what the hell? Talk about a gift. What I noticed? Another thing.
What's that?
And JT's another example. Every time one of these really good golfers, fiance shows up, she's always a pretty good-looking girl.
You think?
You think that's just by coincidence? What do you think?
Oh, I think it's just, happenstance. You know what it is?
I don't want to get
true love. No physical attraction at all.
No,
it's true love.
She had the personality that convinced me, damn it. And this was another young, attractive lady. And, but a lot of these golfers, too, they don't get married until they're 28.
Do you know what I feel that we don't see in golf?
30, 32.
From that type of thing? I don't feel like we see, even mom and dad aren't really big.
You don't get the chunky.
They're all sort of
don't get the chunky.
Like dad doesn't waddle out there. No. You know, I feel like the parents are ordinarily in good shape and look to be extremely rich.
It's interesting how Lumpy got Lumpy, because Carson was a great player, normal sized fella, wonderful guy. So, you're right. They're always. Yeah, TV is more. TV golf is kind of the last of the places where you got the perverted cameraman always showing you shots of the good-looking girlfriend, right? Because, in football and baseball, it used to be that way, but I think they got shut down, right, from doing that.
Monday football used to be a series of that.
Yeah, that's right.
With I think, thank yous paid after the telecast.
Yes. Yeah, we kind of, but golf still, it's a leisurely day. And
right.
Although usually not on every hole, like they.
No, but there's a lot of time to show stuff.
Yeah, there is.
Like you're looking for things.
That is. And I was glad Justin Thomas won, because none of the other guys deserve to. He's the only guy.
What happened?
He's the only guy that played good on Sunday.
So what happened to the top players?
Where were
they?
Zalatoris had never won. Oh, this.
No. In this tournament, where were the top players?
Rahm and those guys?
Yeah, the guys we talked about last week.
They have really tricked up that golf course. They got some funky stuff going on that wasn't there before. And some of the greens looked extremely small to me. It's an old
PGA is ordinarily not that tricked up,
right?
No,
they have gotten there in the last few years. They're playing them tough again. And, the secret is rough. That's if you grow the rough and you make them hit and the other thing that they're all doing now to these golf courses is giving them runoffs. So you look at these greens, okay, and you say, well, he's going to hit the green, but you got to hit about a 3-yard area of the green. Otherwise, it's going to run here, run there, run there. The secret of success to protect the golf courses is not a lot of – you can't get that Wednesday rain. You can't get that 4-inch rain on Wednesday that softens up the greens and keeps them soft. Because if you can get the greens hard, then you can protect themselves. Because they are trying to hit the ball to such small areas. The other thing is – what was that? What was the par 5, Declan? 640?
Yes.
640?
Yeah.
640. And then one of the par 4s was 540.
Yeah.
540. So they're just, it used to be you couldn't have a par 4 over 500 yards.
Right.
But now they're saying, the hell with you guys. If you're going to hit it
380,
we're going to.
Do players complain about this, or do
not
they?
Not really, because they know if they complain how they're going to come off as whiners. Yeah. But they used to every U.S. Open, they complain about something. But
that's where I'm used to it.
Well, the Open, with the U.S. Open, too, it's always about narrow fairways and fescue. I remember
But
I thought that was supposed to be the tough tournament.
The reason Tiger Woods can once again compete at Augusta, if he gets healthier, is, and he's 45, so he probably can't, but they have no rough. Mm-hmm. So there's not, you can miss a fairway and you can, the trees aren't that far away, but you can.
Yeah.
When you miss a fairway at the U.S. Open or the PGA, you're hitting it out of the garbage. Now, St. Andrews would be a good spot for him, too, because if the wind doesn't blow, the winner will be 20 under. If the wind blows, the winner will be 4 under. It's all – those golf courses are all based on whether the –
Tiger going to play in both tournaments now?
I don't think he'll play in the U.S. Open. What do you think, Declan? I don't think he's going to play in the Open.
What do we got?
Where's the Oakland Open?
The U.S. Open this year.
I keep forgetting.
The U.S. Open's in August.
Boss, it's at it's in July, right?
The U.S. Open's August is in. Oh, I'm looking at tennis.
Yeah.
Wrong one.
It's in June.
U.S.
I think.
Open
it's in June. It's always in June.
Yeah. Father's Day.
It's at Boston. That's where it is. It's at the country
club. It's pretty quick, is the point.
He might play there because it's not a long golf course or a grueling golf course.
He was struggling by the end of this one, man.
They're only going to let, I think, 20,000 people on because I covered the Ryder Cup at the country club in 99
was the
when we ran on the court.
Yep, all hell broke loose.
Yeah, it was brutal. The big comeback. It's an old golf, one of the original golf courses, if not the original.
Sure.
But the tees and the greens are right next to each other, so there's no room for people. Mm-hmm. They let an ungodly number of people on for the Ryder Cup, but they're not going to.
The Ryder Cup thing is one of the. It was chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was.
I remember watching it. It was complete chaos at the end.
Generally, you could go out to the Ryder Cup, and on Sunday, you could see something because there'd be 12 matches going on. The rest of the time, it's just terrible because. You only got 4 matches going on at maximum at one time.
Yeah, like
you get all those
like
people.
Here, you couldn't see anything in trunks.
No, you couldn't. Yeah, and people didn't care if they see anything or not.
I will say, Pat, this weekend was the perfect example because all I heard going into this weekend or going into the PGA Championship was, all right, he's finally gotten his game back. He's had a nice couple finishes here. His Spieth is going to take it.
Then
Jordan Spieth was exactly who Jordan Spieth is, man. It all comes down to his putting, and he never was in contention all day. I'm actually surprised Rory did fall off as hard as he did after the great opening round.
He can't putt either. He can't putt. Yeah. That's the reason. He can putt some days, but he's not a – you know who told me this years ago? Corzo. Mm-hmm. Corzo said he'll never win the Masters because he can't putt, and it's a putting contest, and he's right. He'll make a putt once in a while, but he's not a putter, Rory, and you got to, to win at Masters, you got to make putts for 4 days. You can't just make them for a day. So same thing here. He still hits the ball as good as he ever did. He just can't, he just doesn't. He's sitting in the middle of fairway 160 yards away, and he makes 4 way too often, instead of 3. So he's I guess everybody thought that he might be playing at his best. But Spieth, though, I watched him for a while the other day. Has he ever missed a putt where he didn't bitch?
Yeah. Oh, well, he's bitching off the tee. Yeah. That's the best part.
Yeah.
Jordan, you've got to be better when he's just shanking one to the right.
He doesn't swear, right?
No, he doesn't, but he'll talk. He talks to the third person.
You know what?
Every putter, he goes,
Yeah.
He's like Tom Watson, only way earlier in his career. Tom Watson made every putt. Tom Watson was the greatest putter in golf history because he could always try to make every putt.
Yep.
Because if he had a 4 or 5 footer coming back, it was automatic. And then he started missing some of those 5 footers coming back.
Right.
And then he got twitchy, and now he needs a damn you know, a thing with a golf club with a head on it the size of a broom to try to make a putt. Once he stopped making the five-footers coming back, then he had to let the ball waddle down towards the hole like everybody else and didn't make a you know, the secret of being great, and that's why Tiger was a great putter, because he never was worried about being 5 feet past the hole. Right. He made those. People forget that, you know, we always talked about his massive distance and his determination and all that. So that guy was a putting SOB.
I mean, God, he had some absurd putts. That he missed by a cup, but just the way he still putts at 44 is absurd.
Yeah. You know what I've noticed about him, and in this case, I'm not going to deny it that he was hurting. But when Tiger had all his ailments, he kind of became like Go-Go Gomez getting thrown out at second base. The agony increased.
It was high
as he was
sure
as he was making bogeys. I don't blame him for not playing Sunday. He would have shot 85 probably. So the way the golf course was set up on Sunday, he might have shot 85. He didn't belong here. He should have, you know, he was not ready to play that golf course.
I wonder if he's getting a little bit, if he gets something for playing, especially from the network. Because I don't think he has to,
but his sponsors are certainly happy to have him.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, there's got to be a financial payoff. And then if he pulls out now, he's 45.
Isn't he doing the big Rolex commercial? Didn't I see him?
I believe.
Rolex, yep. Poor Rolex. The only watches you can sell anymore are collector's items, right?
Yeah.
I'm one of the, I don't have it on today. I don't wear it as much as I used to.
Dawn wears one. Women wear them now.
Most of the world doesn't wear them anymore.
I don't need a watch. I've got a phone.
I wore one forever. But you know what? When I was a kid, younger, in my 20s, and I didn't start to wear a watch probably until I was in my early 30s. For 10 years, I knew what time it was. Because I was, you know, I would wake up in the morning and wouldn't have to look. I'd know it. I'd go, 7:20, and I'd be within 5 minutes.
Really?
For some reason. But
wow.
Then I got a watch, and now I'm like, you know, what time is it? I don't know what, you know, but, you know.
So you basically gave away this great gift you had because you got a watch.
Yes. Yes.
But those watches, man, used to be like the big watch.
Mm-hmm.
The old man had a big watch.
I always tried for the small ones.
I never went.
Hit them on doors and stuff. Otherwise, the big ones, I went for.
Plus, you know what?
Ones.
Never present an opportunity to get robbed.
Well, that's a new thing today. Hey!
Here, at 70s, you could be walking down the street.
I'm driving with the top down Plymouth today, no problem, waving to my friends. So it was fine. It was nice. I trust my fellow man.
I'm just saying, in the 70s, you could get robbed, too.
Oh, yes.
Downtowns weren't great in the 70s.
Yeah, but, you know, it was funny.
They weren't.
What were we watching? We were watching the first episode of the Apatow's documentary on George Carlin.
I got to watch that.
Watch the first 2 hours.
The Apatow stuff's great.
And it brought us back to the, the riots we're having now are nothing compared to, there's some bad stuff going on and burning and stuff, but that was some hell being raised
in the late
60s. The civil rights movements and then the civil rights movement followed by the Vietnam War was a raucous period. Boy, the first one's 2 hours, so the whole thing must be 4 hours. Huh?
The Shandling one's the same thing, really long and really good.
Well, Shandling I love, but Carlin had really gotten unfunny. Really gotten terribly unfunny.
I got to watch this.
At the end of he had his comeback. But he was doing all these word, you know, plays, P's and stuff like that.
Like
and
70s
then,
or
and
when?
Saturday night, was it SEC TV that did the devastating parodies of him that really hurt him to the crux.
SCTV did?
Oh, God.
Oh, I loved SCTV.
Just lit him up about...
Have you ever watched it?
Oh, God, I loved SCTV. Yeah, the... What was the John Candy? What was the Flaherty character?
The Count?
Well, the Count, but then there was the...
Guy Caballero, the owner of SCTV, who was in a wheelchair.
Guy Caballero was one of the great characters of all time. Oh, SCTV was better than Saturday Night Live.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
It was far more consistent.
Yeah, it originally came out of Canada, right? Yes. Did it always come out of Canada?
Toronto. Well, Second City was in like Chicago and stuff, but I think that show itself came from Toronto. Mm-hmm. And Candy was up there, and Candy had the House of Pancakes, the 3D. How about some pancakes? And then he'd extend them towards the camera to make it look like 3D.
Oh, God. Yeah. Flaherty's were. And
Eugene Levy was great. Yeah. Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah. It was amazing. They ended up making all the Christopher Guest movies, too.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I forgot they made fun of Carlin, though. I don't think I even knew.
Just like, who was Guest?
I must have missed that at the time.
It wasn't Piscopo. It was one of the famous ones. I can't remember. Just Lightning did a devastating impersonation of him. There's all these vegetables called peas and stuff like this. It was, you know, I never was a huge fan of his. Mm-hmm. He's fairly funny, but I don't know. It's, you know, I was, he had to come back, and he was pretty good with his comeback. But he certainly fit the times, you know, of when he started. But he was really bad in the late.
Well, and I didn't know that so at the start, though, he was like on Comedy Hours, and he was pretty, it looked clean cut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is before my time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, his big break was the John Davidson.
Oh, God.
The most vanilla show in the variety. Back when we had
variety
all these
hours.
Everybody who had two hit songs and was
had
the clean cut white image.
Yep.
Could get himself a variety show, and he was the most ill-fitting guest on the John Davidson show.
And there was more coke done on those shows than you could shake a stick at.
Yeah, his wife, who's gorgeous now later in life, and at least when she's being interviewed for this, was a hopeless alcoholic. She became, and she's admitting it, and to the point that she weighed 85 pounds and they put her in the hospital and thought she was going to die.
Jeez. So,
yeah, she was... That daughter of his, she grew up with him. The old man doing huge amounts of coke and the wife being drunk all the time was interesting. But it's, yeah, Apatow stuff is
yeah, his Shanley thing.
He has such an appreciation. I got to watch that. I love
it. It's really long. It's off the charts good.
Larry Sanders might be my favorite ever TV
show. The incredible thing is how tortured every one of these guys. They are miserable human beings.
Shanling was
miserable.
Shanling, they always say, was playing himself.
Yeah.
Larry Sanders. Larry Sanders is Artie. Rip Torn. Rip Torn was my favorite. Is the assistant, the gay assistant, right? He went from the woman assistant to the gay assistant.
I vaguely remember. It's been a while since.
And then they had the homophobic guy that kept insulting him and was going to sue him because the gay guy was going to sue the Larry's show for sexual harassment. And Artie, and they put him in a room to try to, you know, to solve their problems. And they go in there and Artie opens the door and they're kissing, you know, they're like having this romantic kiss Rip closes. Artie closes the door and says, "I think they settled out of court."
Artie
was the greatest. What he used to tell you about his romance with Angie Dickinson and stuff like all these made believe.
And the guests who agreed to come on and play the roles.
Oh yeah.
And then Larry, because you always think like when they go to break that the host is saying something nice, be like, "You effing, you're full of them."
they would be willing to make great fun of each other. It's like that 6-part. Series that Ricky Gervais did on the extras.
Extras.
When they'd get Patrick Stewart came on as a complete, you know, almost pedophile, sexual maniac. Kate Winslet comes on and she's smoking and dressed up like a nun, and she's smoking and scratching her crotch and swearing everything to get them to come on. And it's amazing what good sense of humor they have, you know, a lot of them.
Yes.
Anyway, what sportsy thing do we have? The Twins is about it, huh?
Yeah, Twins.
It really was a dull week.
Twins. Well, I mean, there's some great hockey, but it's not from the Wild, so we don't care as much. And
no,
the basketball games are actually the playoff games.
The basketball games are interesting because they're all 20. The series are okay, but they're all 25 blowout. Oh,
and Wiggy. Wiggy's playing.
Wiggy's a monster. Let's stop giving Gerson Executive of the Year awards. Considering he left us with D'Lo and gave up a high draft choice.
Wiggy's incredible when the pressure is not squarely on Wiggy.
And I think, you know what PJ would say? They have a good culture.
Yep. Yeah, he
and
would.
We don't.
Yeah.
At least not when he was there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't think, you know, Jimmy Butler's leadership way was to tell you what a complete wussy you were, right?
Right.
Pansy you were, and you know,
right.
You're soft and abuse you.
Yep.
I think Curry and even Draymond will say, hey, you know, do this. Come on, join the party.
Yeah.
Have some fun here. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
And that's he's the nice thing is they can have a. He can be the best player on a court one game out of five, and that's fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was
exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
he doesn't have to carry.
In fact, you go to one of their games, and and Wiggy goes 12-4 and mm-hmm. 3, and you say, yeah, okay, who cares?
Here was a big deal.
You know who's really helped that team is that Jordan Poole giving them a third guard to go with. I mean, that guy's.
They've done a very nice job of retooling that roster.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably going to win it, although the Celtics will.
The Heat would be great fun, though, huh?
Yeah, they'll win it.
Butler against Wiggy in the NBA Finals.
Oh, it would be
Wouldn't
great.
That be fun?
Yeah, it would be. It would be. But I think I still think Boston's going to win the series. I think they're better.
You know, Boston's turnaround from what was the Christmas
20
game?
Games in, you had to get rid of the coach. And
yeah,
and
Brad
it
Stevens.
It was impossible to play Brown
yeah,
and
Smart.
And
Tatum.
Brown Tatum. And Tatum together.
Yeah.
And it was impossible because they played the same position.
Yeah.
If I was a columnist in Boston, like my friend O'Shaughnessy, I'm sure he's had some columns that he had to eat from back then because he did quite a bit of Celtic stuff in his day. So, yeah, it is an amazing turnaround with a European coach that none of us ever
was
heard
a
of.
A Nets assistant last season,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. It was quite a hire by Brad Stevens mm-hmm. to replace him, that's for sure.
All right, sir.
All righty.
We'll talk to you next week.
If you have questions about your retirement savings, do what I did and work with a person that knows what the heck is going on. Work with Josh Arnold, Mr. Money Talk. My guy Josh will give you straight talk and not sugar-coated advice. Learn how you can benefit from Josh's focused approach by setting up your own no-cost, no-obligation 48-minute consultation to review your investments. Call Josh now, 952-925-5608.